Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace, and this episode is another Top Cal Thursday episode, and Manny and I are lucky enough to be joined by one of our favorite creators. I've talked about this man many times on the podcast and his incredible work, how excited I was from the very first time I heard about his first project at Top Cal, which was Eclipse, and now he's got the volume one of his second property over at Top Cow, Port of Earth, which just dropped yesterday, as you're hearing this, Wednesday, March 14th. So I hope you had a chance to go out and pick it up. If not, I highly recommend it. Zach Kaplan, writer of Port of Earth, is here with us. Thanks for joining us, Zach.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, it's always great to have you on. I oftentimes think about the first time I met you. I think it was a Long Beach Comic Con, and I think just the first issue of Eclipse had come out, and you were hustling, man. Like, you were hustling, selling,
selling the book. I must have been wide-eyed and ignorant of all the things that I've learned in the past year or so, but yes, that must have been when I was like, hey, read my issue one of Eclipse. So
I can't wait till you're as big as your talent deserves for you to be, and I can say I knew him when.
I'll come back on. We can talk all about it.
That'll be awesome. That'll be awesome. So we mentioned Port of Earth. We mentioned Eclipse that you've had both for Top Cal. Why don't you give our listeners a little bit of intro into how you got into to writing comics, the real Cliff Notes version, if you will.
How I got into writing comics? Lots and lots of pitches, and I got lucky. I grew up on comics. Loved them, always loved them. Went through a period of definite superhero Marvel back in my teenage years. A little bit of Spawn and other things thrown in there, but tried to get away from them in college when I was trying to be cool, and then realized I couldn't quit them and found them again and got into right around 2002, 2003. That would have been Warren Ellis, Brian K. Vaughan, Greg Rucka, Garth Ennis, and fell in love with creator-owned comics and have been a fan. I went to film school, studied writing, done a lot of things around Hollywood, but nothing that ever got made. And always dreamed of making a comic. And pitch, years of trying. And I got lucky, got a chance to do Eclipse. It was initially slated to just be a little four-issue run, and it blew up on me, and that became ongoing, and Eclipse comes back this summer, and then Port of Earth is my second series with Top Cow.
Yeah, they're both really incredible. Manny, do you remember? Did I tell you about Eclipse first? When did you first hear about Eclipse? I'm trying to remember.
No, actually, I think for once I had to jump on Eclipse because, I met Chris,
Northrop
over at Stockton Con, and he was with Dylan, and they were doing their initial, push on just, the posters for the issue that would come out later.
That's right. So, that would have been before I was at Long Beach with the issue one.
Right. So, but remember, it got announced the year before, but you were waiting for Giovanni. Is that right?
Yeah, there were several factors. I mean, one of the biggest was we waited. Yeah, I waited 5 months or so to get Giovanni. And then we began. And then there were some production issues. Not related to anything. It's just like slating, you know, and figuring out when to do it. And then the Image changed their rules the year I was coming out, and they required creators to have so much done. And so it took a while to come out. But yeah, then it finally came out in September of 2016.
Yeah. It was awesome.
But right before it came out, yeah, I do think that they were going around with some posters at Stockton Con. I do remember that. So
I like that, yeah. Manny, I like the fact that you and I were like both when we heard about it, but you know, me initially at San Diego 2015 and you at Stockton Con 2016, both super excited about it. It sounded awesome, like completely separately, because I don't think I had mentioned it to you. But I do remember.
No, actually.
No, go ahead.
No, yeah, because I remember Dylan was like, oh my God, Matt signed his new writer on. He's so good, and he's going to be dropping the clips. And then, so he got me excited for it. And, you know, if Top Cow's going to sell me on a book, usually I'm buying. So, they had hyped it all up for me. So by the time I did finally get to meet Zach over at, Long Beach, I was already sold on the book.
Yeah. Now let's switch over to Port of Earth now. The reason we're here, I know for a fact you and I both, Manny, both found out about that book at the same time because we were both at the Top Cow panel at San Diego. And I remember hearing Zach's name, hearing Port of Earth, hearing, it's not coming in war, it's not coming in peace, it's coming with a business deal. And you and I just both looked at each other and kind of nodded our heads like, oh, yeah. So why don't you tell our listeners, if they're not familiar with the book, Zach, what's Port of Earth all about?
You gave my elevator pitch, but I'll do it again. It's what would happen if aliens came not to blow us up like they always do in movies and television and stories. But what if aliens came with a business deal? And the business deal is they want to open a port up here on Earth. And it's a very politically thought-provoking action thriller. I like to use references like District 9 or Men in Black. But to go a little deeper, basically, aliens come. They are traveling from the center of the galaxy out towards the frontier, and we're kind of on the frontier. And they all their ships run on water, and they want to use our planet as a weight station to basically fuel their ships. And in exchange for allowing them to build a port, they offer us the technology to turn water into energy. And it seems like a pretty good deal, so we sign up. And they open up a port, and the ships start trickling in, and everything seems fine and dandy until aliens leave the port, and they're not supposed to. They come to human-populated areas, cause trouble. And it turns out we didn't make a deal with the United Nations of the Galaxy. We made a deal with the Chevron of the Galaxy, and they don't really monitor who comes and goes. And what's more, they charge us as part of the deal to run security, not just to protect human beings, but to protect alien visitors as well. And we find ourselves in a bit of a quagmire as a planet. And the story follows a combination of the agents on the ground and what they go through. And there's an interview framework that kind of explores the backdrop of this world as the journalist is interviewing the head of the Earth Security Agency. And that's Port of Earth.
Yeah, and there's so many layers to it, and I want to get into the story, and I have so many questions. But before we do that, how's the reception been for the first four issues? What have you been hearing from your fans?
Oh, I mean, amazing. it's been incredible. I mean, it definitely the sales were better than Eclipse. I think all four issues have now sold out. I think we did a pretty heavy print run. And I kind of, after Eclipse, we ended up going into sets, and I kind of said, well, I'd rather print more and take 3 weeks to sell out than sell out 1 week because it's more people to get the comic. So that's exactly what we did. And I think it did sell out, within 3 or 4 weeks, but then all the other issues have sold out. The reviews have been really awesome, and fans have been flipping over it. It's been a real joy. And I think also what was kind of scary, I mean, I knew people would like aliens. I wasn't sure if people would geek out over the politics and the complexity that I wanted to explore. And if anything, I think that's been a lot of people's favorite. I've gotten people saying they actually loved the interviews at the beginning because of the layers and the nuance and all that kind of stuff. And so that's been very rewarding to me, to just hear people geek out over that. And, it's been great. It's been great.
Yeah. I've been hearing a lot of buzz too from other creators that are picking up the book and really enjoying it. So that's gotta be gratifying as well. Have you heard from fellow creators that they're digging on this?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of people posting and stuff. I kind of lose track. So, I mean, yeah, it's been really great. I was just up at Emerald City and meeting with some other creators and guys who are putting out sci-fi books and image books and yeah, it's always rewarding. But I mean, as rewarding as it is and surreal as it is sometimes to have a creator, a big creator, or somebody say they've heard of your book or nice work or whatever. I mean, I think some of the fan ones are actually, for me, to have a fan geek out on your book, like really truly geek out. I don't think I've had any creators like truly geek out yet. They're like, supportive and congratulatory. If you happen to know a creator that's geeking out on Port of Earth a lot, let me know. But I think, you know, lots of fans have geeked out on it, and that's been really satisfying to have fans.
Yeah, as a storyteller, I mean, it's about kind of provoking a reaction, right? Whether that's like an emotional reaction or making somebody stop and think about something. And I got to tell you, like, I read the first four issues, I kind of got angry. That was like my emotional reaction. I was like, man, these guys, what were they thinking? And you know, the interview and the
who were you angry at? I buy it, but I'm curious, were you angry at the ESA or at humans or the
everybody? I'm angry at him. I mean, I feel bad for the everyman who didn't really have a say, you know, but the people that made the decisions, yeah. And they seemed, it was so short-sighted, you know, and I know it was kind of like the 1% was making decisions for everybody else. And we're going to get into that, but man, it just irked me, you know, it was like, and it kind of leads into my next question. It's almost like a story without any good guys. All the main characters are like, who are the heroes here? I'm not sure who to root for, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, you're definitely supposed to root for the two agents. And you're supposed to root for the journalist.
She's probably my favorite character. The journalist is
trying to uncover the truth, and she's trying to get at the root of what's going on. And you're supposed to, I think that the agents are just trying to do their job, and they, there's really no easy way to do this job. And, you know, on the one hand, you come upon a situation where a deadly alien may have killed somebody, but the protocols are so nuanced because you don't know if the alien is, if it's a big misunderstanding. And so these guys can't actually barrel in and just shoot and blow the alien away. They actually have to give the alien the benefit of the doubt and still try to safely remove the alien back to the port. Unless the alien directly provokes them with aggression or deadly force. So, you know, it's very complicated. And I think you're meant to be frustrated because I tried to make it as real life as possible. I think the other thing that I found has worked kind of effectively was the whole thing is done in a very voyeuristic kind of way. Like, it's all through the having that interview framework and then having the agents viewed through TV cameras on drones. But they're basically you feel like you're watching the whole thing unfold on CNN. It makes you feel like you're powerless to really do anything. And as much as you like to emotionally connect with these guys, you know that you're just watching the news on the Port of Earth, basically. And so, I'm not the least bit surprised to hear that it's frustrating because I tried to layer in as much complexity as possible. But I think, you know, we're working on the second arc right now, and the second arc stays with Rice and McIntyre in a very big way. And I think you'll be both frustrated, but definitely empathize with those guys as the next arc continues. It's not a good guy. I mean, I guess, you know, Eclipse is a little more like there's a good guy and there's a bad guy. But that's complex too. I like complexity. I like taking one side of things and then twisting and then turning it. So
yeah, I mean, it's always good to have different perspectives.
Yeah,
Manny, I'm curious, who do you like relate to in the story most, or who do you find yourself rooting for, Rice or McIntyre, or like where do you come out on it?
You know, it's really interesting because I'm taking from what both of you said. I also find myself really upset at the book all the time. So, to be honest, I don't find myself rooting for anyone. I'm just really intrigued by the story. And I think the problem I have is that it's a little too grounded for me. So as I'm reading this, I'm like, man, this can really happen. Like, I can see Chevron and BP and all these other companies coming together and be like, hey, look, aliens, this is going to be a good deal. And I mean, just from the very beginning of the book where the port, it's set up, first ship comes and it goes and everyone's like, oh, whoa, you know, it all worked out kind of. And then it fast forwards to all the issues that came with it. I felt really upset because I'm like, I can see this actually happening.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah, from the economy I'm reading falling it, apart to.
And I'm looking at, especially, I think I talked to you about it, Jace, when we review a couple of the issues, but I'm looking at the interview with the director. I'm like, I just want to kill this guy, you know, cause he's for me, he's the villain. The aliens just took advantage of a situation.
Sure.
So, you know, the agents, they're just doing their jobs. And I feel like from my perspective, I'm that every man. I'm that guy who got completely screwed out of the deal.
Yeah. I think had I opened the story and you met Rice and McIntyre in their homes and you woke up with them and you saw them go jogging with their dog or McIntyre kiss his wife and kids and they all went off and you got to relate to those two guys more as human beings, you would empathize with them more. But I couldn't do that and set up the, this voyeuristic kind of news approach. And, it was in terms of writing, I debated it a lot and I kind of know, well, one, on the one hand, you can go completely dramatic and the total dramatic choice will allow people to relate to these guys more. But then in doing so, you'll make people feel like they're more invested in those guys and not the overall situation. And if you actually do this device and you actually have the whole thing voyeuristically through the news cameras, they'll feel powerless and it will be really, it'll make it feel more modern, which like, it reminds me of like just what's going on in the world today. We're all at home watching our TVs and kind of yelling at our TVs, regardless of what side you're on. But, we're all powerless really to do anything about it. And it's all kind of unfolding and we're just helpless. And so, you know, I kind of went with this device and hoped that I could develop a just enough character on the journey to allow people to somewhat connect with them while creating this dynamic. So,
yeah, you know, I think it's an interesting way to do it because you're completely right. We're on the outside looking in, and you know, being I'm a comic fan from way back when. I've read so many books, and so I'm always trying to relate. You know, and I'm looking at the two agents as almost like, you know, different sides of the same coin. Cause Rice is a little more like reserved, you know, he's a little more cautious and McIntyre seems to be, you know, a hothead. And his family, he himself was a mechanic at one point and he lost his job with the way the economy tanked with just having the water engine technology just dropped in our laps and everything. So, you know, I try to put myself in his shoes, you know, and know that there's like, that's where that anger comes from. And I try to put myself in his situation. It's just, it's such a foreign situation. It makes it hard to relate. So yeah, I think
it is a little more cerebral and that's just, right. I think that's just the 101 of storytelling compared to like a character like Bax in Eclipse, who you meet and you spend one-on-one time with him and he's your conduit through the world and you're personally walking around with him and you just, you're invariably going to relate more with a character that way. So yeah, I in Port of Earth, your guide is the cameras and not any one character. And so the fact that you guys both kind of go, I'm invested in the world, but I'm not sure who I'm rooting for. that, I guess that's inevitably by the design of it. You know, you are the character and you are just watching it all unfold and there's not much you can do.
It feels like you have less control, right? Because when you're, you know, reading a story like the way you structured Eclipse, you know, and you're getting into Bax's head, you identify with him and you almost put yourself in his shoes walking through the story. And because he's the main character to some extent, he has some control and he's, you know, controlling what happens through his actions and his decisions. And so you, by proxy, feel like you have a little bit of control. In Port of Earth, man, you're just along for the ride, 100%.
Yeah, and you don't have a lot of control, and you're voyeuristically watching these two guys who you kind of cerebrally identify with, but I think that in a weird way, it makes people have an interesting connection to the world, and that was kind of what I was hoping for. That people kind of go, this feels like it's real. It feels like it's happening. It feels like I could really watch. This is how it would happen. This is what, you captured aliens coming and putting a port here. This is what would happen. And it's frustrating and terrifying. And it makes me think and I don't have the answers. So that was my weird goal with Port of Earth.
As a reader, at least this is how I feel about it. And you mentioned this yourself, you know, the way the world is now, we're all, regardless of which side you're on, we're all sitting there, you know, watching the news and we can't believe what's going on. And so the politics of the story is really where you relate, because for the most part, all of us that, you know, aren't the president or some, you know, high level official, we don't have a lot of control over the policy of what's goes on in this country. We're not really the decision makers. Yeah, we have a vote like everybody else does, but it's not, we don't really have like a high level of control either. So, I mean, you had to be developing this story long before the politics of today, but in a way it was kind of prescient, right? Because it's really appropriate and relatable to what's going on in at least in this country today.
Yeah, I mean, I had the idea and been thinking about it and developing it, but obviously when I sit down to script it and map it all out, what's going on today seeps in a very organic way. You know, there's nothing specific. There's no Donald Trump in this or anything, but there is capitalism.
Right.
And there is cronyism. And there is economic disruption. And you know, I tried to approach it in ways that people don't expect. The whole premise is built on a twist. You know, what would happen if aliens came in a business deal? And so you think that you know what you think you know what's going to happen. You think you can expect it. And so I try to continue to turn it on its head as much as I can in ways you kind of go, oh, well, that makes total sense too. Why didn't I consider that new technology would potentially have an economic disruption? Of course, that makes sense, but I just thought it was going to be like clean. And so I try to like add layers as much as I possibly can to it. And I think that just comes from, you know, yeah, I'm ripping, the feel from today's headlines as opposed to anything in particular.
All right, let me ask this next question to Manny first before we get Zach's opinion on it. But Manny, why do you think anyone would ever agree to the terms that the consortium set down? Like, okay, we're going to give you this technology, but it's going to be at your expense to build this port. And, you know, the aliens are going to come in and you've got to, you know, handle all the security and you've got to protect not only the lives of your citizens of your planet, but the lives of the aliens, or, you know, we might not let them in, you know, or leave, you know, pack up and go home and close down the port. Like, why do you think, is there a reason you think anyone would ever agree to this? Because it seems to me on the outside looking in like a bad deal.
It's a terrible deal for 99% of everyone else. But when you look at who's running the show, you're looking at big corporations. You're looking at people who, throughout history, not necessarily care too much about the well-being of humankind. They're more looking to line their pockets. So, as far as your question, why would you ever agree to the terms? Because you're going to benefit from it. The technology that you're going to take from it, you're going to turn around and you're going to sell it.
So, and
they're going to be lining your pockets.
So pure greed,
it's,
money.
It's going to be. It's going to. I don't care if Joe Blow loses his job because I'm getting richer. I don't care. The security aspect of it, we'll figure it out as we go. I'm getting money. Who cares? So that to me is the only reason why anybody would ever agree to the terms. And for everyone else, I mean, it's just a matter of kind of being excited. They go along with it maybe just because you're excited that you're making contact with aliens. For politicians, a lot of their campaigns and whatnot are funded by these people. So, you know, they're being handed down a bunch of money too. So, I mean, it's really about greed than anything else.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you to a point, but yet at the same time, it's like when you have to know. I mean, first of all, most of these people that were making a decision have more money than they know what to do with already. So I think more so than maybe monetary, it's more about the power and being on the in. This is the most monumental event in human history to some extent. And to be involved, I'm sure there's a level of ego there. But I feel like none of them really stopped to think about the long term. You know, yeah, they wanted the power. Yeah, they wanted the money, but they ever stopped
but
to really
human
think
nature. That's human nature. I think, you know, you have aliens show up and offer to end your energy crisis and overnight and give you advanced technology. And the only thing they're going to need is, you know, a few gallons of water here and there that's incidentally not going to have any impact on your environment. Their ships are going to come and go as they please. It's hard to understand the nuance of it all. I think once you read the comic, you realize how raw a deal it was. But at the onset, I think most people would fall for it. I think the other layer too that I try to touch upon, in a very small way, but I think is perhaps the most impactful element here is Tom Rutgers, who runs the ESA, says at one point, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, these aliens showed up and wanted to put a port on our planet. And, you know, what do you think was going to happen if we said no? And, you know, there is this kind of question. Aliens suddenly contact humanity and they want our planet and they're far advanced than us. Are we really in a position to say no, or you know, is that deal inevitable? And I think there's a lot of psychology that goes on. I mean, I think that the whole story is kind of inspired by human civilizations interacting with each other. You know, and so I think of things like the Europeans coming over to the New World, and you know, there's when the Europeans say we're going to build a fort over there, don't mind us. You know, they've got horses and guns and cannons and ships. The Native Americans at first don't understand the impact, but they're also not really in a position to say don't. You know, right. So they kind of say well, they start to make deals. So, I don't know, it's complicated, but that's what I love about it. But yeah, obviously hindsight, we realize how bad a deal it has been for us, and also perhaps how bad a deal it's been for majority of the human population compared to the 1%.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the human nature. It's like the haves and the have-nots that are kind of – that we're seeing in the story. I imagine that theme's going to continue in the second volume, right?
Yeah, I mean, but that's just that's what happened. But I tried to do two layers. You know, on the one hand, you see the fact that the ESA has given out contracts to corporations. The very same people who run the ESA are also financially benefiting from this deal, and so that's very, very frustrating. But there's always this like answer for everything that makes you not know what to believe, which I feel is very modern. You know, for every time the reporter says, you gave Halliburton and Boeing the contract, you know, the response is, well, they were the only companies that could actually manage the construction of this port. And you kind of go, oh, well, I guess there are very few companies that would be able to handle the scale of this. And so it's just,
it's human nature. It's human nature to trade experience and advantage for personal gain, and it's never just evil. It's always complex enough that it's both, and that I think that there's always like truth on both sides. It's so infuriating, but it's just a modern element that we don't know which spin to believe. I tried to layer in both haves and have nots, but then I always have the other side explained just enough that you kind of go, you know, just have a little layer of doubt there. But it's certainly a lot of fun to explore all the layers. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, we're really talking a lot about, you know, the politics and things from the human side, you know, from the earth side, but really, there's been another plot thread that's been running throughout that maybe there's hints of some kind of a conspiracy on the part of the aliens. Is that going to be explored more in the second volume as well?
Well, there's something going on in the background, and that definitely comes out more in volume two. But again, I don't think that conspiracy is a loaded word. But there is something going on in the background, and we can sense that we're not getting the whole picture about what's going on with the ESA and the consortium. And yes, the second arc definitely unveils more of that, and the second arc stays with Rice and McIntyre. And we have a big finish at issue 8. Andrea Moody is we're drawing the end of 7 right now, and it's just gorgeous. 7 is such an amazing issue because we're just building and building and building. And so it's been really a lot of fun to continue working on. The art's amazing, and the story's really, I mean, we're looking at the possibility of keep going more. I mean, it's been doing so well. So I'd love to continue it. But from the very time I started it, I had a very clear vision of what happens at issue 8. And so it definitely wraps up both all of those things that you're wondering what's going on in the background, as well as the impact it has on guys like Rice and McIntyre and where that interview finally ends up. So stay tuned. If you got volume 1, then I've got more coming your way. We're only taking 1 month off, and then we come back with a whole 4 more issues and another arc, and it's awesome. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Good. And I'm glad to hear that you're going to keep that framing technique too. Cause the interview, I'm really digging. Cause I know you and I had talked about, you were a little nervous about, just doing kind of talking kind of thing with the interview, but I think it comes off beautifully. It's done very, very,
thank
very well.
You. Yeah. No, I've gotten a lot of feedback about it now. And so now I'm really finding my stride with it even, I think. And so I think even the next 4 issues, it's even more cohesive and just really cool. So more world building, more complexity, and more character. Actually, I think if you were reading the first 4 issues and feeling a little voyeuristic, I actually think that you will find yourself rooting for these two guys in the next 4 issues because there's a big, I'm not going to spoil it, but the end of volume 1 ends with a very personal thing that happens to them, and the second arc is all about the repercussions of that. So that's definitely an emotional aspect of the story that's been really fun to read. So it's awesome. If you haven't read it at all, go check it out.
Definitely.
It's like the volume 1s, they make them $10. It's so awesome. So and it's really gorgeous. We did a ton of back matter in the book, just kind of like taking to the world of the ESA database and aliens and ships, and Andrea Moody's art is amazing. Vladimir Popov's colors are really like, it's a really interesting approach to colors. It's like really muted and sick. Like the skies are like pale yellow, and it just feels very like District 90, like something's off, and I love it. So.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I wanted to mention, I'm glad you brought it up. Andrea Moody's work, because I don't think that just any artist could handle those, that interview, the framing, and have it be as interesting and as dynamic as it does. You know, he changes around the angles, and he, Tom Rutgers, is that his last name? He's got,
Rutgers. Yeah.
Yeah. He's wearing glasses. So, Andrea doesn't even have the advantage of being able to show his eyes, to give us, kind of a window into his soul, if you will, to be a little cliche or to use it to emote. And even without that, even with him wearing kind of these mirrored glasses where you can't see his eyes, you get the smarminess of him. You understand who he is as a guy, and that he's like a career politician, a career spin doctor. It comes across so well. And that's what evokes, responses like Manny wants to kill the guy. I mean, that to me, that's 100% your dialogue, but also, you know, your partnership with Andrea being able to have that come across the page.
Well, you know, Andrea's, what's really cool about him is his style is actually, it's like really messy, really textured, really emotional. And I think that if I pitched you Port of Earth and then we were talking about the kind of style to get for someone to do this book, the initial thought would be, well, you got to get someone who's very structured, who can really capture the details. But because I wanted it to have this voyeuristic, messy, gritty, District 90 kind of on the ground kind of feel, it had to be this style. And he just does it. So it's like messy. There's like splatter on like ink splatter on some of the pages. Like, it's really cool. And I love it for the book. And I think it makes the book feel different. And it's a great style, and he just kills it. So it's been a lot of fun to work with him. He's also a really fun guy. Really loves science fiction. He's done Star Wars, Aliens, Prometheus, Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, lots of sci-fi stuff. So it's been really cool to work with him. I guess Girl with a Dragon Tattoo is not sci-fi, but that's dark. But he's been great. He's been great. He is great.
Yeah, because I mean, a lot of times when you think about sci-fi, you know, you think Star Trek and, you know, the world, the future is clean and, you know, shiny, and that wouldn't work for this story, because this story is more complex. It has more depth than that. And so I think that would have been a disservice to get somebody, like you said, real structured and clean. So yeah, you get a lot more emotion and mood. The art's almost intimidating in a way. And so, yeah, it's a perfect marriage.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great for this book.
All right. So, as Zach said, if you haven't checked out Port of Earth, I can't say enough about how incredible this book is. So get out there to your comic shop, get out there to places like Amazon or in stock trades. You can pick it up there. It's available digitally as well. What about upcoming projects, Zach? You have anything you want to talk about coming up that we should be on the lookout for?
Well, yeah, just this past Tuesday, I announced my third series, and this is with Aftershock Comics, who's just been killing it with one amazing title after the next. So the new series is called The Lost City Explorers, and it basically says, well, what you didn't know is the mythical Lost City of Atlantis is hidden underneath New York City. And it follows a group of millennial teenagers. One of their dads goes missing in a research expedition, and they have to go on an underground exploration adventure to rescue him. And it's a mashup of science fiction and supernatural, archaeological, urban exploration. And it's just a fun ride. It's awesome. It's my homage to Goonies or Stranger Things, but it's done in 2018, and it's got badass millennial empowered kids, 17-year-olds, and it's awesome. Alvaro Saraceca is a relatively newcomer when it comes to the art. He's done a few books, Turok, The Sovereigns, and some work on Magnus, but he's amazing and he's shining and, he's gonna, you guys are gonna be blown away by what he's doing. And yeah, it's a really, it's an awesome, fun series. And, I'm super excited. It's gonna come out in June. And, yeah, if you like those things, I think you'll love it.
Manny, I want to get your reaction. Well, first of all, I should tell the listeners. So there was the announcement was in the Hollywood Reporter. I'll put a link to the article in the show notes so you can get a little more detail about it. And of course, we'll definitely be talking about it when it gets a little closer on our Aftershock Monday episodes. But Manny, when you read the article and you know you knew Zach was the writer, it's Aftershock. What was your reaction?
Well, you know, I had a couple of reactions. Number one, I was very excited that Zach was on Aftershock because I think between you and I, we pretty much read almost every series that Aftershock puts out just because most of those titles are a lot of great writers, great creative teams that are just looking to put out their amazing stories that maybe they can't put out at DC at wherever they're at. So, so obviously I knew that, you know, this is going to be a story that it, that means that's pretty special to him. And then, going a little further into it, when I got into the article and it talks about what the premise is, Atlantis under New York, and it's a group of kids. And then he said the word Goonies and I was like, all right, I'm completely sold. as a big fan of Goonies, Stranger Things, It, I mean, just any of those films or stories with a group of kids, exploring, I am a big fan of just because you have a lot more, I think creativity, you have a lot more, you could do a lot more with kids because, I mean, almost anything is possible with kids. So, putting it all together, I'm very excited for this. I'm sure we're going to be talking out of our elbows about this book and, looking at some of the preview pages that were provided. It looks solid. I cannot wait to get that first issue and to get going on this, little journey.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. And in fact, this, neither one of you know this, but, so I'm putting together the show notes to have Zach on, and you know I always like to give whoever comes on the show a chance to talk about any upcoming projects. And at that time when I wrote the show notes, I didn't know anything about this; it hadn't been announced yet. And so I'm typing this up, and I'm like, yeah, I'll ask Zach about his upcoming projects. And I think to myself, you know what would be really great? Like I love Eclipse, and I obviously love Port of Earth, and I love the complexity that Zach puts in both, and it really makes me think. But what I really would like to see for Zach to do next is something really fun where I, you know, it's just an adventure and I don't have to think too much. And I would like to see, because Zach's such a talented writer, so quickly, and I've told him this 100 times, that the pacing on Eclipse blew me away. It was so good for a first time writer. And so now I want to see Zach tackle something that's more fun, because I'm very curious with his sensibility and his, you know, his storytelling and his pacing, what it would be like. And then a couple days later, lo and behold, I get an email from Zach and he says, hey, how about if we talk about this? I don't know if you saw it, just got announced today. And it's Atlantis under New York City. It's teenagers. It's Goonies. This is going to be a whole heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah. Asked and delivered. I definitely think this one is more fun. And definitely the emphasis is on kind of capturing that lust for exploration that you, even as a teenager, you can have, I think. And I remember, I mean, I've always been inspired ever since I saw Goonies, just to wonder what's beyond that bridge or in that sewer or underneath a city, you know, past the subway tracks and, you know, what aren't we exploring? And this one definitely is got an urban exploration angle to it, which is, I don't know how much you guys know about urban exploration, but it is so cool. I mean, especially in cities like New York, where there's just so much forgotten history and abandoned infrastructure, tunnels, sewers, conduits, just all prohibition tunnels, all sorts of just stuff down there that has just been forgotten. And it's a whole world to be explored. And so it's a really cool world to check out. The characters are very relatable, and it's a blast to be working on it. I'm really excited for you guys to check it out.
Yeah, when I read the article, I did want to ask you that. Are you a New York guy? Like, because like you said, there's so much to explore there. We've seen it in, you know, movies like Bone Collector and Mimic and things like that. The whole world.
I have a love for New York, but I've only lived there one summer, so I'm not like a born and raised New York guy. But I've always been fascinated by it. I'm also a little overwhelmed by it every time I go. But yeah. I love it. And I actually. A few years back when I had this idea noodling around, I found a guy who does underground exploration, and I paid him to take me around underground. And it's totally off the radar. And, you know, you're not supposed to do it, but we did it, and it's just awesome and fascinating what's underground when you jump off the tracks. You jump off the subway platform and you go where you're not supposed to, and the stuff you see down there. So I've just always been fascinated by New York, by its history, by its complexity, and that merged with Goonies and a love of archaeology and lost cities. And this has also got a kind of sci-fi spin on it. It's one big mashup, and it works beautifully, and it's awesome. I'm not a New York guy, but I love New York. I love exploring stuff in New York. I mean, Eclipse takes place in New York, so I've come back a couple times to that city.
Yeah, and you and I were talking before we started recording just about how much respect we both have for all the guys over there at Aftershock. And so you just fan of them and decided, hey, I want to do this story and I want to do it over at Aftershock. Is that how it came about?
It was then. I actually also... have crossed paths with Lee Kramer, who's one of the principals over at Aftershock. I had not met Mike Martz, but yeah, I loved what Aftershock was doing. And I love Top Cow and Image. Had a great time. Eclipse is coming back this summer. Port of Earth is continuing. I'm talking with them about more stuff. So I love everything I'm doing there. But, you know, I wanted to spread the love and do some more things. And when I looked around the marketplace, I was just reading everything Aftershock. I was super impressed. I mean, they're a relatively new company, and I just loved what they were doing. And I reached out to them and pitched them the idea. And that was that. We started work on it right away. And it's been awesome. They're super enthusiastic and collaborative, and they're doing everything right as a new company. And it's so far been a dream to work with them.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. So, well, Zach, I want to really thank you for your time. We love having you on. It's always great to talk to you. And man, keep up the good work.
I will. Yeah, I've got more. Believe it or not, I told you guys also, Eclipse is coming back this summer. We were on a little bit of a break because first publishing stuff, but then also Giovanni got the chance to go draw Batman Shadow for DC Dynamite, which is an amazing run. And he's gotten so good. So now we're back and he's working on the next arc of Eclipse. I got to tell you guys, it's crazy. It's crazy. Like this guy, this is Jeff Darrow level bananas amazingness. It's real. I'm seeing these pages come in and I'm just like, why do I deserve this? It's just so amazing. So if you like the clip, when it comes back, it's gonna blow you guys away. It's so good. The story, if I do say so myself, I'm super proud of the story. The art's amazing.
Yeah, and then I've got more irons in the fire, and I can't say too much, but by the end of the year, there will be more, and it's going to be an amazing year. I can't believe it's just getting started, but I've dove into the deep end of comics, and I don't know how I'm juggling everything I am, but there's a lot of comics to be done, so I'm excited. It's going to be a great year.
That sounds really exciting. I'm real happy for you. You know, like I said, from you know, the first,
thanks, guys.
The first arc of Eclipse, totally blown away by, you know, I keep going back to the pacing thing. It's so hard for a new comic writer to get that right. You nailed it. So, you know, you're always welcome to come on and talk about any new projects you have coming up. And I will say,
it's also a real pleasure to connect with guys, especially, you know, who've been supportive from the get go and been cheering me on. And so, anytime, always a pleasure to talk to you guys. And you guys really always get what I'm going for. So it's always a delight. So thank you very much.
Yeah, my pleasure. And I do want to say this about Giovanni's artwork. It's already so good. I don't know how it can really get better, but I'll take your word for it. I can't wait to see
new Sun Deaths. It is nuts how much better, as good as it is. It's crazy. I don't even know how to say it. Like he's going to be a huge, huge name. Like, no, I think after Clips, if I can keep, I'm going to try to keep him doing my comics as long as I possibly can. But I have a feeling that he'll end up going to do stuff for DC and Marvel. And he's just going to continue to, I mean, he hasn't even been in the business for I think, 10 years, less than 10 years.
Yeah,
so it's just so amazing to me, the level of detail and the level of fluidity and emotion and power, and his layout are so, so good. It's awesome. If anybody out there listening has enjoyed Eclipse and you're banging your head and you're pissed off at us for taking so long, just wait. Just you wait. You will not be disappointed.
Well, I'm just glad I've had Port of Earth to hold me over.
You did. And then you have Lost City Explorers. Although I think Lost City Explorers comes out in June, and I think Eclipse will be out by the end of the summer. So July, August. So that's what we're looking at, I think. So then you'll have a lot, and the Port of Earth will continue. So and then I'll talk to you guys in the fall about having 3 comics out simultaneously.
Nice. I got to get all the Zach Kaplan on my comic rack that I can stand.
That's what I'm going to try. I'm going to try to pull, I'm trying to unlock the Rick Remender portion of the game.
There you go.
Where you've unlocked the Remender challenge. Can you have 4 books out simultaneously, or 5 books out simultaneously? That's the goal. So we'll see if I can pull it off.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well,
awesome.
Great talking with you guys. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's our pleasure, Zach. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. As always, don't forget you can go to the Comic Source blog for all previous episodes of the podcast. Also, we're over on LRM Online now with all our episodes over there. So be sure to check out our podcast over there, as well as all their other pop culture content covering movies, TV shows, all that kind of good stuff. Twitter.com/TheComicSource is where you can find us on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to keep up to date with new episodes coming out, as well as all our convention coverage. Just a quick reminder, Manny and I will both be at WonderCon in Anaheim, California at the end of the month with a really awesome giveaway, so be sure and track us down. So once again, thanks to Zach for joining us. Be sure and get out there and pick up Port of Earth Volume 1, and we'll talk to you next time.